Hello and welcome to Travel Fun. My name is Mary Beth Clementi and I'm the host of this talk show on travel. And this week I have travel writer, editor extraordinaire, Don George on the phone from California. I met Don a number of years ago in California at a travel writers conference that he organizes. And at that time, he was the editor at Lonely Planet. He is very well known for being the author of Lonely Planet's Guide to Travel Writing. And he is also the editor at National Geographic Traveler, Gadling.com. We're also going to be talking about other publications that he writes for and sharing travel information. I'd like to welcome Don George to Travel Fun. Hi, Don.
Hello, Mary Beth. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you again. I mentioned in the intro that we met 7 or 8 years ago, and I believe I had you as a Travel Fun guest maybe 6 years ago or 5 years ago. And in reviewing some of the links you sent me, I was able to revisit your love for France and for Paris. And of course, you know, I want to tap into that right away, having lived 11 years in Paris and authored guidebooks on Paris and the French provinces myself. Let's start out talking about that. And I'd like you to draw a parallel with a marvelous article that anybody that has an interest in Paris should read. And that's from National Geographic Traveler. I believe it was the November issue of 2012. And I just love how you describe basically your love affair with Paris in that piece entitled La Bonne Vie in Paris.
Yes, it totally changed my life going to Paris. I had studied French literature in college and was lucky enough to get a stage, like an internship, in Paris the summer between my junior and senior years, and then again for the summer after my senior year. And I went and lived there. And the first year I lived with a family. The second year I got my own apartment overlooking the Tuileries on the Rue de Rivoli. It was an amazing setting. And I really fell in love with Paris, especially the second summer. I had been liberated from school. I'd graduated. The future lay before me. I had no idea what I was going to do with my life. And I think that kind of opened me up to the magic of being in Paris. And there was a particular moment when I descended in the morning to go to my job, and I just kind of stopped in the street and realized that France and Paris was just all around me. It was around me in the people who are walking by me and in the gentlemen who are taking their daily café crème at the bar across the way. And really, everything around me spoke and exuded Frenchness, and the magazines and the sounds and the perfumes. And I just felt, this is it. This is the classroom of the world. And I had been thinking I would go back to graduate school, and I thought, this is graduate school. This is what I want to do with my life. I want to learn about the world in the world, and I want to write about it. And there was that moment in Paris that truly transformed me when I thought, I am going to become a travel writer. And that was it. And I owe it all to Paris, I think. And I truly, to this day, feel that when I go back to Paris, I just feel incredibly rejuvenated and exhilarated and excited and fall in love with France all over again.
And you convey that so beautifully in the piece, La Bonne Vie in Paris. And I'm going to be posting this interview as a podcast on my blog, and I'll be sure to put the link into that story that appeared in National Geographic Traveler. It just is so eloquently written, and of course, being a Parisophile, Francophile myself, I can really identify with that. Don, you have had such an illustrious career. You were the travel editor at the San Francisco Examiner and Chronicle. Then you edited Salon.com's travel site. Now it seems as though you're very much involved with National Geographic Traveler. And in addition to doing features such as the one we just talked about on Paris, you have a regular column that provides reading recommendations called Triplet.
Right.
And just going through there, it seems as though most of the reading recommendations are in the travel literature category for perhaps the armchair traveler, or if you're actually going to take them to the road. And since it is summer, would you like to share a couple of good reads for us, either at the beach or on top of a mountain?
Yes. Well, I'll share one new one and one old one. The new one that I actually just finished reading, which I think is just an amazing book, is a book by a woman named Anna Bodkin, which is called The World is a Carpet. And it's about Afghanistan, of all places. And she goes, and she's an award-winning journalist, and she goes and lives in a little village in Afghanistan, in northern Afghanistan, and just talks about kind of daily life there. And what it's like in this incredibly tiny village that's almost literally off the map. And she just presents such a different portrait of Afghanistan and the people and not the country of the headlines and the war that we read about all the time and that we associate with it, but just an amazing portrait of the people who live in this simple, tiny village eking out a living. And it was just really transporting for me and really moving. So I loved that. And then the book that I always recommend to people, because I think it's the best travel book ever written, is by Peter Matheson, and it's called The Snow Leopard. And it's just an extraordinary book about going into the Himalaya in search of the elusive snow leopard, but it's also about his Buddhist faith and practice and about his relationship with his wife and his family. And it interweaves all of these really complicated, rich, interesting threads into this incredible tale of a quest and what it means to be on a quest and what it means to be on the journey of life and love and relationships. And it's just one of the most magnificent and moving books I've ever read, and it really changed my life because I read it at a point where I wasn't quite sure what direction to go in. And it gave me the kind of power to believe in myself and to trust my heart and to leap into the unknown, because that's what my heart was telling me to do. And it's all worked out wonderfully. So I really recommend that book to people.
As you talk about that, I'm wondering, he might have come to Mountain Film in Telluride. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this wonderful festival that has been going on for, I believe it's about 35 years at this point. And he might have made an appearance here. I'll probably get calls on this. We do at that festival feature, in addition to films, a wonderful amount of travel books in the form of travel literature. So it would be good to have you come here. It would be good to have you come to Telluride sometime for that festival. So
I would love to come to Telluride for that festival. That would be amazing. I've heard about the festival, of course, for years. Peter Matheson, I hope, did appear there. He's an extraordinary speaker and a really inspiring person in all ways.
Once again, I'm visiting with Don George, and Don has many, many different titles. Of course, you are a busy man, Don. I don't know how you keep up, and plus all the traveling that you do. Let's just get back to the travel literature. Would you say that there has been an increasing interest in travel literature over the years. I don't know whether I think that that's the case because I'm particularly interested in that genre. You are more of an expert and would know for sure, but it seems as though people are gravitating toward that more and more.
I think there is, and I think it's the result of a few different things. More and more people are traveling, and I think when you travel, you kind of naturally get more interested in travel and in other people's travels, and you start maybe with guidebooks, but then you move quickly beyond guidebooks to the kinds of books that I write about in the Trip Lit column, which are really just books that transport us. And it could be novels, it could be nonfiction, it could even be poetry, but it's books that have a very vivid sense of place, and that when you read them, you feel like you've traveled somewhere. And I do feel that those books are becoming, there's more and more of them. They're gaining in popularity. And partly this probably has to do with the internet, too, and the proliferation of travel writing on the internet that I think is engaging more and more people and inspiring them to look in different places for great travel writing. And so this combination of things, people traveling more and having greater access to writing about travel and writing about travel literature, I think, is really propelling a growth in the publishing of travel books. And for me, that's wonderful. That's as good as it gets, because when I can't be traveling, and I do travel a lot, you're right, but when I can't be traveling, I love to read about it and read about it in a way that evokes both a particular experience in a particular place, but also kind of the larger meaning of that experience and what it's all about when we go outside our comfort zone and encounter other people in other places and the magic that can happen when you do that. So it's very fulfilling to me as a traveler and a writer and a travel writer that more and more publishing is devoted to travel books.
I agree. And you mentioned Afghanistan, the book on Afghanistan earlier, and that's a place I don't imagine I will ever go, but one never knows. However, I did feel as though I traveled there when I read a book, not sure if you heard about it, The Kabul School of Beauty. And that was really lovely. And so, yes, I think being travel writers, and I'm a travel writer, it is, we are naturally drawn to that genre. So yeah. It was good to have your input on that. You are also the special features editor and lead blogger for Gadling.com. And I found a story there, a recent post that really touched me. And it's entitled Commencement Address, Five Lessons from the Road. And to me, when I read that, it was, you know, really also about five lessons for life, five lessons for travelers, and it was all encompassing. And I'm sure that that was your intention. Would you talk a little bit about that piece?
Yes. Well, the genesis for that piece was that my son was graduating a couple of weekends ago from UC San Diego, and my daughter had just graduated from graduate school the summer before. So in the span of 1 year, basically, both my children had had these major life changes. And I thought, you know, this is kind of maybe the last opportunity that I'm going to have to write my commencement address to my kids. You know, what would I like to say to them, and what would I like them to take away as they go into the next stage of their life journey? And so I just kind of sat down and thought about what I had learned as a traveler, what life had taught me. And I really do feel strongly that life is a journey. And so as a travel writer, I'm really writing about life. I'm not just writing about the places I visit or the experiences I have as a traveler, but really, I mean, life is a journey. So, but I synthesized it down into five lessons, and I just thought this is what life has taught me. One is to pursue your passion. One was to listen to your gut. One was to open yourself to the universe. And these are all things that I've learned. And then trust in the kindness of strangers was the fourth one. And then the fifth one was don't be afraid to get lost. And these lessons began for me in Paris in all of these cases, and just have been reinforced wherever I go, whatever adventures and misadventures I get into. It's really all about kind of trusting your gut, trusting your heart, pursuing what you really want to do in life, and opening yourself up to the world and up to the people that you meet. And I find that the rewards that I get just increase and increase the more I'm able to trust other people and open myself up to people. And I say, like, cultivate the art of vulnerability, because the more vulnerable you're able to be, the more the world will reward you and enrich you and treat you warmly and embrace you. And that's really what I've found in my wandering. So I wanted to pass those lessons on to my kids. And the reaction online has been incredibly gratifying. Lots and lots of people have tweeted about it and Facebooked about it and shared it and sent it on to friends. And that's just been hugely, hugely gratifying to me. It really began as just me trying to communicate something to my two kids. But you know, luckily, happily, it's become communicated to a lot more people out there, and it seems to have resonated with a lot of people, which is the best thing a writer can hope for. So I feel really privileged to have Gadling as a platform that reaches a lot of people, and you know, that people take the time to comment on and share something like this. It's huge for me as a writer. It's a blessing.
And once again, I'm going to be providing these links in my post, and because I don't want to just tease people and have them sift through the whole Gadling.com site and
right.
all of that.
Well, thank you.
Now, another site that you are very much involved with, you are the editor-in-chief at Recce, spelled R-E-C-C-E, and that's a literary journal. Well, literary journeys for the discerning traveler, and from what I gathered from it, it's a compilation of travel stories. And I was particularly endeared by one from you that you wrote entitled The Magic of Travel, Bringing Namibia Home. And would you be so kind to read that?
I would be honored to read it. Thank you, yes. Yes, it's called The Magic of Travel, Bringing Namibia Home. And here it is. I just returned from a week in Namibia. I spent 5 nights sleeping in the bush, sometimes in simple tents on the ground, sometimes in permanent tented camps. When you sleep in the bush, your ears become keenly attuned to the sounds of the night. 2 nights ago, an hour or two after midnight, I heard a progressive crunch, crackle, scuffle, as a herd of something, hartebeest, wildebeest, filed nonchalantly by, a stone's throw from my sleeping bag. The night before that, I was transported by baboons babooning away in the blackness of the valley below. 2 nights before, I awoke to lions to the left of me, lions to the right of me. Last night, I was sleeping in my own Northern California bed for the first time in a week. My neighbor has an elderly dog that sleeps outside every night. The dog has a habit of waking up in the middle of the night and making a kind of snuffling, scruffling, wheezing cough sigh. Last night, at 3 a.m., I awoke and heard that sound. And the thought shot through my brain, rhino, there's a rhino next door. And suddenly my little suburban neighborhood seemed a whole lot more exotic than it ever had been before. That's the magic of travel.
I have a huge smile on my face, and I'm sure anyone listening to that does as well. It's such a marvelous piece, your choice of words. It's also crisp and visual, and you can hear and feel, and you're right there. And I think what I like most about it is that it really shows how the residual effects of travel. We often talk about planning a trip and building up to planning a trip and how that's such an important part of travel, all the travel planning. But we don't talk so much about the lingering effects, big and small. And
right.
You really tap into that, and I just love it.
Thank you. Well, it just happened. I thought, oh my God, there's a rhino there. And then, of course, I realized, oh, wait, I'm home. I'm in Northern California. But right, there's that sense. I mean, Namibia now lives inside me. I'd never been there before. And now suddenly it's a part of the constellation of the universe that's inside me. I figure all the places I've ever been and reside right now are living somehow inside me right now. And I love that idea that the more we travel, the bigger we become, and the bigger the universe inside us is. And so it's magic. It really is kind of magic to have Namibia inside me now and to make these connections. It totally transforms the way I look at the world. And I think that's really what travel's all about.
And I think a lot of this happens on a subconscious level, too, that because if only we could remember everything that we've experienced or read or whatever, but it's all in there somewhere inside of us, and who knows when it's going to come out. That's great.
Well, exactly. I mean, it really is all in there, and it comes out in different times. And I'll be walking down a street in San Francisco, and a particular slant of sunlight will take me back to Athens, Greece, suddenly, and I'll just say, wow, there'll be this kind of momentary bridge and this conjunction of places and moments. And it's like life has all these layers, and I think the more you experience and embrace those layers, the kind of richer every moment of your day becomes and every day of your life becomes. And I love that is there, subconsciously existing and having its own sort of existence that suddenly pierces your consciousness once in a while. It's quite amazing.
Another publication that you are involved with, you are also the editor, is the Adventurous Traveler blog, and that's part of the Adventure Collection. And first of all, talk about the Adventure Collection, what that is.
The Adventure Collection is this really amazing consortium of 9 adventure travel companies, all of which are really dedicated to just providing extraordinary travel experiences for travelers. And they range from there's a biking company, Backroads. There's a cruise company, Lindblad Expeditions. Geographic Expeditions is a member. Oars, which specializes in water trips, is a member. Off the Beaten Path. And then there's two companies that specialize in safaris, Mikado and Bush Tracks. And then there's an organization called Knowles, which specializes in outdoor education. These 9 companies have a blog, which I edit, which just has a lot of rich content about adventure travel. And adventure travel pretty much spanning the whole spectrum from really intense extreme adventure to easy, soft, anyone can do it adventure. And that's what the companies represent. And they have trips all around the world. And it's, for me, I'm an employee of them, so I'm biased. But even before I was an employee doing this blog, these are the best travel companies in the adventure field, I think. And so I'm really honored and privileged to work with them. And they offer this incredible range of experiences and activities for people. If you go on the AdventureCollection.com website, you can literally go anywhere in the world that you want to go with an extraordinarily reputable company that will take good care of you and deliver an adventure of a lifetime. So I just feel super lucky to have a working relationship with them and to edit the blog, which presents great writing and great photography from a number of different contributors, all in the spirit of celebrating the wonders of travel.
And that's the Adventurous Traveler blog, also known as Don's Place. I like that. There's one story on there. We don't have time to go over it now, but people might be interested in checking it out. 7 tips for choosing summer travel. So that's very timely. And I recommend people give that a look-see. I am visiting with Don George, travel writer, editor, extraordinaire, and last but certainly not least, and I'm coming full circle in how I met you, Don. I believe it was 7 or 8 years ago in Corte Madera, California. Hope I pronounce that well. I don't do very well with Spanish. At Book Passage, a wonderful bookstore, independent bookstore at the Travel Writers Conference. And it's also taking place this year, August 8th through 11th. And you are one of the founders, I believe, certainly the driving force behind this conference. Would you chat a little bit about that in the few minutes we have left?
Yes, this is every year. It's a highlight of my life, highlight of my year. We began it 22 years ago. Elaine Petrocelli, the owner of Book Passage, and I, back when I was the travel editor at The Examiner and Chronicle. And it's 4 days of celebration of great travel writing and photography. You can find out more about it at the website, which is bookpassage.com. But basically, we have morning workshops, which are pretty intense interactions with one or two faculty members and a limited number of students. And they focus on different areas from writing for print to writing for online publishing to photography to writing book-length memoirs. We try to cover a range of areas. And then we have afternoon panels that cover everything people might need to know to try to be successful as travel writers or photographers. And then we have evening social events and readings and conversations on stage. And a lot of the magic of the conference actually happens in between the official meetings, when you get to talk to Tim Cahill or Amy Tan or Isabel Allende or Peter Matheson, all of whom have been guests of honor. You get to talk to them about your life and their work, and it's really quite amazing. And the success rate from this conference is astonishing to me, how many people have gone on to write articles and books from their experiences at the conference. So I just feel incredibly privileged to be the papa of this wonderful event, and the great people who show up this year, Tim Cahill and Amy Tan, are going to be guests of honor. We have editors from most of the major travel magazines are going to be there, and a whole array of fantastic photographers and writers and agents. And it really is a highlight for me of every year. And people's lives, literally every year, at least half a dozen people tell me their lives have been totally changed by being there. So it doesn't get much better than that for me as a teacher and a traveler and a writer. I'm thrilled to be a part of Book Passage, and I urge all of your listeners to at least check it out, because it could change their lives also.
And that's bookpassage.com. It was a big shift for me, and at that point when I went there, I had already had either 3 or 4 guidebooks published. But it still was a big shift, and it was marvelous. What a fiesta and celebration, and I learned so much and had so many contacts. In fact, I connected with Tim Cahill, and he ended up coming to Telluride for a writer's conference, and it wasn't exactly connected to my meeting him, but we did reconnect here, and he actually was in this very studio doing an interview with me.
Wow.
And we had a fun interview. And
he's one of my heroes.
He is.
He's great.
In case people don't recognize the name, he was the founder of Outside Magazine. In fact, I have a story on my blog about him. I'm not sure whether I put the podcast up, so I will have to dig up that tape and put that up. And I also remember meeting Isabel Allende. She was just lovely. Mm-hmm. And of course, Elaine Petrocelli. You know, she's just such a figure in the book world. So bravo for keeping that going and for having founded it. Sadly, Don, we are running out of time. Once again, am going to be posting this on my blog. I'll have the podcast up. And I will provide the links to the different stories we talked about. And that's BonjourColorado.com. Don, you don't have one website for you where it...
I don't.
But that's okay.
You know what? I'm actually right now in the process of building it. It's going to be called... It's going to be www.don-george.com. So,
okay.
I'm working on that.
It's a huge job, and I know. So when it goes live, I'll be sure to add that link. And
thank you very much.
Put everything under that umbrella, dongeorge.com with a hyphen in the middle.
Right, right, Don-George.
Don, thank you so much for being a guest on Travel Fun, and you know, continued success and wonderful journeys.
Thank you, Mary Beth. The same to you, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Yes. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.